route. Everything's supposed to just flow through. Why has it stopped?
I don't know.
Mo and the residents, they're crossing.
Why do you never cut your hair?
What?
Is it, like, religious or something?
New Mystery Plays. Weeknights at 11 on BBC Radio 3.
And there's another chance to hear all five new Mystery Plays as our Drama on 3 next Sunday, starting at the later than usual time of 9 o'clock here on BBC Radio 3. 90 to 93 FM on digital radio and online, it's 11:30. And time now for Jazz Lineup this week, presented by Kevin Legendre.
Hello, welcome to Jazz Lineup. If spring is in the air, then today's programme is positively blooming with great music and great stories. We have musician and broadcaster Alan Shipton talking about the Buck Clayton Legacy Band, which keeps alive the memory of a legendary trumpeter. In Now's the Time, our celebration of unrecognised classic albums in jazz, we go back to the stunning debut by vocalist extraordinaire Bobby McFerrin. And I also have the latest new releases celebrating the very best of the UK jazz scene and beyond. That includes music from Dennis Baptiste, Tommy Smith's new group Karma, and to start things off, a new recording from one of the great stalwarts of British jazz, reed maestro Alan Barnes. He teamed up with the American clarinet virtuoso Ken Poplawski a few years ago, and they've joined forces again on the appropriately entitled Happy Reunion. They're backed by the Woodville All-Stars, and the programme consists mostly of pieces by Duke Ellington. Here's one of the Duke's absolutely timeless compositions, The Mooch.
Thank you.
Ellingtonia Endures. That has to be one of the most seductive but haunting themes in jazz. The Mooch, sumptuously played by a band led by clarinetist Ken Poplawski and alto saxophonist Alan Barnes, backed by the Woodville All-Stars, who are Robert Fowler on tenor sax, Bruce Adams on trumpet, Mark Nightingale on trombone, Robin Aspland on piano, Andrew Kleindert on double bass, and Bobby Worth on drums. The Mooch is on the album Happy Reunion, which is available on Woodville Records. From Woodville to Blue Note Records, and a new signing on the label who is the cause of great excitement. His name is Ambrose Akinmuziri, he plays the trumpet, and although just 27 years old, he already has something of a signature both in his writing and improvising. His Blue Note debut is called When the Heart Emerges Glistening, and has a number of striking, down-tempo pieces that draw liberally on American gospel and European classical music, and have really gorgeous harmonies and a great use of subtle, shifting dynamics. This is a piece called Jaya. Thank you. Jaya by the trumpeter Ambrose Akinmusiri, from his latest album When the Heart Emerges Glistening. He has a great band of fellow young Americans. Harish Raghavan is on double bass, Justin Brown on drums, Gerald Clayton on piano, and Walter Smith III on tenor sax. Ambrose's album, which is co-produced by Jason Moran, by the way, is out now on Blue Note. Next up, a brand new release from Scottish saxophonist Tommy Smith. He's done a great amount of acoustic music in the past, but his new group, Karma, has more of an electric sound. Alan Kosker is on drums, Steve Hamilton on piano and keyboards, and Kevin Glasgow on bass guitar. The album is called Karma, and this is the high-energy opening track, Cause and Effect. That's Tommy Smith's new group Karma, which he calls his grunge band, and they certainly know how to get rough and ready. Alan Kosker is on drums, Kevin Glasgow on bass guitar, and Steve Hamilton on piano and keyboards. Tommy Smith is, of course, on the tenor sax, and the album Karma is on his own Spartacus label. And if you want to hear this music live, then get down to the Pizza Express Jazz Club, Soho, London, on April the 28th for Karma's launch gig. As you may know, Claire Martin is a great jazz singer as well as a presenter of Jazz Lineup, and she has a new album out on Lynn Records. It's called Witchcraft, and it's a collaboration with pianist and vocalist Richard Rodney Bennett, somebody known first and foremost for his work in classical music. This partnership celebrates another partnership, that of the great Broadway composer Cy Coleman and the lyricist Carolyn Lee. One of their most well-known creations was indeed Witchcraft, and that's the title track of the album.
That sly, come hither stare, that strips my conscience bare, it's witchcraft.
It's witchcraft.
And I got no defense for it, the heat is too intense for it. What good would common sense for it do?
What good would it do?
Cause it's witchcraft.
It's witchcraft.
Wicked witchcraft.
Wicked witchcraft.
And although I know it's strictly taboo.
It's strictly taboo.
When you arouse the need in me, my heart says yes indeed to me. Proceed with what you're leading me to.
What you're leading me to. Oh,
it's such an ancient pitch, but one I wouldn't switch. For there's no nicer witch than you.
No nicer witch than you. Shades of old Lucretia Borgia, there's a devil in you tonight.
And although my heart adores ya, my head says it ain't right. Right to let you make advances, oh no. Under normal circumstances I go. But oh, those fingers in my hair, that sly come hither stare, that strips my conscience bare, it's witchcraft.
And I got no defense for it, the heat is too intense for it. What good would common sense for it do?
Cause it's witchcraft.
It's witchcraft.
Wicked, wicked
witchcraft. Wicked
witchcraft. And although I know it's strictly taboo.
It's strictly taboo.
When you arouse the need in me, my heart says yes indeed in me. Proceed with what you're leading me to.
It's such an ancient pitch, but one I wouldn't switch, cause there's no nicer witch than you. Witchcraft!
It has such a devilishly bittersweet quality, and it also has Lucretia Borgia in the lyrics. It is Witchcraft, a hit for none other than Frank Sinatra in 1957, but sounding very fresh in 2011 in the hands of Claire Martin and Richard Rodney Bennett. She's singing and he's playing piano and also singing, and their album Witchcraft is out now on Lynn. Coming up shortly are highlights of a concert set by the Buck Clayton Legacy Band, recorded on March the 27th at the Sage during the Gateshead International Jazz Festival. One of the key musicians behind this performance, Alan Shipton, joins me to reflect on this fantastic concert, which was especially recorded for Jazz Lineup. But to whet your appetite, here's a Buck Clayton original. This is The Green Tiger. That was Buck Clayton's The Green Tiger, recorded in 1964, featuring Buck and Humphrey Littleton playing trumpets, Tony Coe on tenor sax, Joe Temperley on baritone sax, Eddie Harvey on piano, Pete Blannon on bass, and Eddie Taylor on drums. And it's featured on an album called Le Vrai Buck Clayton. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Kevin Legendre, on FM, online and on DAB Digital Radio. And it's my pleasure to say I'm joined by musician and broadcaster Alan Shipton, somebody who has a great passion for the music of Buck Clayton. Alan, welcome.
Well, very good to be here, Kevin.
That tune that we just played, The Green Tiger, has an intriguing title. Can you enlighten us as to what that might be about?
It's about Buck himself, because Buck had green eyes, and he was a very striking, very unusual-looking man, and he was known for many years in the Count Basie Band as Cat Eye, because he had this very striking look. And this piece, The Green Tiger, sort of sums up both his appearance and the fact that as a player, particularly with Humph, he used to use what Humphrey called wrestler's tricks, which is that he'd pretend that he was just coasting on second trumpet, and then when Humph had blown himself to pieces, Buck would come out and absolutely slaughter him with some high notes and some fantastic playing.
Like a tiger.
Exactly.
Growling away. So as well as playing double bass in the Buck Clayton Legacy Band, you edited Buck Clayton's autobiography, Buck Clayton's Jazz World. You knew him very well. You had a lengthy relationship over many years. And you describe him as a very sweet man. So actually doing this concert, leading the Buck Clayton Legacy Band, I imagine that was a very personal thing for you.
Extremely personal. It actually goes back to a letter that Buck wrote to me not long before he died in 1993. We'd met, as you say, in the mid-80s when I was his editor at Macmillan for a book called Buck Clayton's Jazz World. And the manuscript arrived, and Kevin, you know this only too well, one of the jobs of a publisher's editor is to work with the author to hone a book to something that is going to be publishable. And Buck's was really a very good book, but it stopped at the moment when he was unable to play because he had problems with his teeth. And I said to him, actually, your story is really interesting about how you went on beyond that point and created a new life as a writer, arranging for various bands, including Humph, and leading a band at Hunter College in New York. So he said, oh, that's a great idea. I thought nobody'd be interested in my later career. And that was the start of the friendship, coaxing those last chapters out of him and his friend Nancy Miller Elliott, who'd actually worked with him on the book. So I used to go and see Buck and Nancy when I was in New York. And at that stage, because I was running Grove's Dictionaries of Music, I was there quite a lot. Their New York office was not far from where Buck was living at the time, and I used to go for a drink with him almost once every couple of months. And so it developed into a friendship. We used to go and hear music together. We used to talk about the state of the world and share stories about the Basie Band.
What was he like as a person?
Everybody says he was a very sweet man. He was. He was considerate. He was sweet. He was also the most dapper and well-turned-out man that I met on that sort of Basie scene. But to finish the story about the music, so in 1993 he wrote to me and he said, I can't tell you how grateful I am that you've managed to keep my legacy alive with the book. Here's another something that might allow you to keep my legacy alive. And in this box were a collection of lead sheets that he'd written over the years, some full arrangements and some bits of parts for various bits of music. And for the most part, this was recent writing that he'd done for the big band that he used to lead at the Village Vanguard, which he directed, even though he couldn't play anymore, in the late 80s and early 90s. And he said, try and keep this music alive after I've gone. So that is really what this is about. This year is Buck's 100th birthday, or would have been, and so it's my labour of love to bring that music back to life.
But that sounds like an incredibly exciting moment for you to just receive this present, this parcel through the post with this little treasure trove of tunes. Yet at the same time, I imagine, given the fact that you had a friendship with him and that you knew him well, that it was also a bit pressurising to take that on, because obviously you've got to do it justice.
That's very difficult, and it took a long time to feel that we'd got the circumstances right. I worked with a wonderful German saxophonist, Matthias Seufert, who we started playing together on classic jazz festivals around Europe in the early part of the noughties. And Matthias and I took the music to pieces, looked at it, and he said, well, I think what we'll do is I'll take away the lead sheets and the chords and some of the parts for these pieces, and I'll craft them all into consistent arrangements for a nine-piece band. Because one of the problems is some of them were written for big bands, some for octets, some for just trios or quartets.
Do you know when they were written?
Most of them, I think, for this band that he used to lead in New York in the 80s. Although some charts, we do a version of Smoothie, which is a piece that Buck wrote for the Basie Band back in 1952,
right.
But then he rewrote it like many musicians, he'd always think of better things to do with his
revisit
chart.
It over time.
Yeah, so these are basically pieces that he was working on during the period from about 1986 to 1990.
And the challenge for you was to be faithful to the Buck Clayton style, as it were. Could you put that into words? I mean, he was one of the star soloists of the Basie Band, going right back to the 30s. It's the golden age of the swing era. He's steeped in swing music. That style of his could be aggressive, punchy, riffy. How did you go about making sure that you captured all of that?
Well, we wanted to model the band on two things. One was the sound of the little octet that Buck toured in Europe in 1961, which had a lot of his ex-Basie colleagues, Earl Warren, Buddy Tate, Dickie Wells, Sir Charles Thompson on piano, and then the wonderful Gene Ramey on bass, who was very much my role model for how to play in this band, and Oliver Jackson on drums. So that was the sort of sound that we wanted. Buck in the 60s, playing absolutely at the height of his game. That was his best moment, I think, as a player. So I needed to find two trumpeters who could do the job that he and Emmett Berry did in that band. And one was my old friend from the Vile Bodies big band at the Ritz. We played together for years in the 1990s, Ian Smith. And the other was a fantastic trumpet player from Amsterdam, Menno Dams, who has only one arm. He's a left-armed, one-handed trumpeter. But my goodness, Menno is one of the most brilliant players in this style. And there are moments when I was on the bandstand listening to him and I thought, rather eerily, the hairs went up on the back of my neck. I thought, this is Buck visiting us in the way that these pieces are played, because Menno gets the style absolutely, and yet he still remains himself as a player.
Which obviously is part of the whole jazz aesthetic as well, sort of keeping the spirit of other players alive, yet at the same time bringing your own contribution to the table.
The other thing we wanted to do was to try and approach the rhythm section in what I hesitate to call an authentic manner, but yes, I will call it authentic. We didn't want to be in the era of amplified basses, electric guitars. We were looking back at the sound of the Basie Band. I mean, one of my great thrills when I was growing up was hearing the original Basie Band at the Festival Hall. Well, I say original, the 1970s Basie Band at the Festival Hall. I sat on the stage about 10 feet from Freddie Green, who was playing...
The guitarist.
Unamplified. Mm. And the sound of Freddie's guitar cut through a 16-piece band perfectly. So we wanted to do that. Martin Wheatley is just the best acoustic guitarist in this style in the country, and he was luckily free and was able to join us. So that's one thing. My bass is also strung with gut. It's played the way that basses would have been played at that time. And I was lucky enough to study about 15, 20 years ago with Jimmy Woody, the great ex-Ellington bassist. So I was trying to construct bass lines that felt authentic in that period, and who better to teach me that than Jimmy? So I hope I've done him justice as well.
Well, let's hear some of this music now, because my appetite has definitely been whetted, as it were. So some edited highlights of that concert coming up straight away. The Buck Clayton Legacy Band with Alan Shipton on bass, Matthias Seufert and Alan Barnes on saxophones, Menno Dams and Ian Smith on trumpets, Adrian Fry on trombone, Martin Litton on piano, Martin Wheatley on guitar, on unamplified guitar, and Norman Emberson on drums. We're going to start with a tune called Party Time. Alan, what is this tune about?
Well, like a lot of Buck's tunes, I think he put the titles on pieces after the event. But I like to think of this as one of those Kansas City small group jam-ish pieces. It's full of bonhomie and good humour, and it's kind of slightly uppish. It's the feeling where you feel that Buddy Tate might spring out of the wings any moment and take a couple of choruses on tenor, or any of those other chaps might spectrally walk in from the wings and join in.
This is Party Time by the Buck Clayton Legacy Band. We'll be right back.
Any of you who ever heard a record of Buck Clayton playing will know that he was one of the supreme lyrical trumpet players in jazz, and that lyrical imagination led him to write some of the most haunting melodies. And we're going to play one of Buck's best melodies now. It's called I'll Make Believe.
Thank you.
I'll make believe. And amongst the soloists there, Alan Barnes, Matthias Seifert, Ian Smith, Mano Dams, Adrian Fry, and Martin Litton. Now, we've talked about the music we're playing as the unrecorded music of Buck Clayton, and we're now going to make a just tiny exception to that by playing a piece that was the opening number for almost all the concerts that Buck played on his European tour with a band very similar to this in lineup in 1961. This is a blues called Outer Drive.
The Buck Clayton Legacy Band recorded at this year's Gateshead International Jazz Festival. You just heard Outer Drive. Before that, it was I'll Make Believe. And we kicked off with Party Time. I'm joined by Alan Shipton, bandleader for the Buck Clayton Legacy Band. We talked just before we heard that first sequence about this joyous quality of the music, rousing, energetic, swing. It gives you that feeling, doesn't it? For me, it's happy music.
Very much so, and I think that is one of the characteristics of the whole idea of the Kansas City Jam Session, which Buck carried through into his work with Basie in the 30s, and then the small groups that he led in New York in the 50s and the 60s. All those wonderful Buck Clayton Jam Sessions on Vanguard and various other labels from the 50s have that feeling too, that this is guys getting together and just having a good time. And I have to say, and by the way, I should mention that the band is co-led by me and Matthias Seufert. He's the musical director of the band. I'm the chap that has to make sure that they all get there on time and that you know, everybody has enough fuel in the tank, that sort of thing. But all of us felt that that was the thing we wanted to replicate, where we were getting on very well. I mean, there was no personalities in this band kind of edging one another out of the way. It was a great time on the road. We did several concerts here in the UK, in Oxford, in London, in Birmingham, as well as Gateshead. And all that time, we just had incredible fun.
Did you have any nerves at all?
Well, of course, particularly me, because, I mean, the other guys are all professional musicians. I have been in the past, but for the last 20 years or so, I've been here on Radio 3 presenting jazz programmes rather than playing on them. So I had a lot of work to do to get my playing back to scratch.
Let's talk a little bit, just to round off, about legacy bands in general. And this whole question of keeping somebody's name alive. The Buck Clayton Legacy Band basically does what it says on the tin. The other band that springs to mind on that subject is, say, the Mingus Dynasty Band, which is a repertory group for Mingus's tunes. Anytime I see them at Ronnie Scott's, I feel that I'm connecting with a piece of jazz history that came before me, that I didn't have a chance to see when it was actually happening back in the 60s, as it were. Is that part of the motivation for you, to keep this thing alive and give people, as you were saying before, some sense of authenticity of what the music could have been like back in the 50s?
Well, I think we do play with a slightly more contemporary feel in some respects. But yes, that's definitely one of the objects of the band. But the real motivation for this was to play a set of music by Buck that was really high quality but had not been heard or recorded before. Obviously, some of these pieces were played by his own band at the Vanguard, and I think by the band that his trumpeter, lead trumpeter in that latter-day band, Randy Sankey, led afterwards, which was also briefly in vogue in the 90s and called the Buck Clayton Legacy. But Randy, in the end, has moved on to other things. And although that band recorded, most of what they recorded was material that Buck had already made in some other form. So what we wanted to do here was to play, and we build the tour as the unrecorded music of Buck Clayton. Mm. And of course, we broke that immediately because Outer Drive, which you've just played from the concert, was the piece which Buck used to open every single one of his European concerts in 1961.
But it puts things into context so well, and for somebody who doesn't have that much of a handle on Buck Clayton's legacy, as it were, it's just a great introduction. So it sets things up very nicely.
Yes, I mean, there's always an argument about legacy bands that why should you go back and revisit the past? But I always feel that there's a rather good essay about this by the late John Wayne, who was professor of poetry at Oxford, and he talks about the musée imaginaire, the museum of the imagination, where what you can do is, with the digital age, you can go into almost any area of history and you can pull something off the shelf, and there's more to be said, more to be found, more to be explored. So I suppose what we are in is the musée imaginaire of the 1960s and Buck Clayton's sound, and actual charts that were written in the 80s to keep it alive then. We're trying to keep it alive into a new century.
Well, it's still sounding very contemporary, very joyous and upbeat. So I think we should listen to some more music. In fact, we can go to some more edited highlights of tonight's concert set. We're actually going to hear Sir Humphrey, but that's preceded by Horn of Plenty. Tell me more about what they refer to.
Sir Humphrey dates from that period in the 1980s when Buck had to give up playing the trumpet but had still kept that very long-running friendship going with Humphrey Littleton. And this is one of a number of pieces that he wrote for the then Littleton Band, in which indeed Alan Barnes was playing. So there's a direct personal connection. But as far as I know, Humph's band didn't record this piece at that time, although I heard them playing it during that tour. Their instrumentation was slightly different from ours, so we've rearranged it for exactly the forces that Buck's own touring bands of the 60s had. That's the main change there. But it does celebrate this long-running and very deep friendship that Humph and Buck had together. And paradoxically, the one we're going to hear first, Horn of Plenty, we were talking about the joyous Kansas City sound, but this is the one piece on the set that's in a minor key.
So slightly more plaintive, different vibe, but still it's got some energy there, hasn't it?
Very much. It's got that medium swing tempo that is such a hallmark of the Kansas City sound.
Fantastic. Alan Shipton, thank you very much for coming in to talk about the Buck Clayton Legacy Band. And this is the Buck Clayton Legacy Band with Horn of Plenty.
We're now going to play a tune that Buck wrote quite late in his career, in the 1980s, to commemorate a great friendship. Now, many of us saw on television in the 1960s, and perhaps live if you're lucky enough, Buck on tour with the Humphrey Littleton Band. And the friendship between Buck Clayton and Humphrey was a really deep one. In fact, Humphrey wrote the foreword to Buck's autobiography and said that this was one of the great lasting friendships of his life. So this tune is called Sir Humphrey.
Thank you.
That was the Buck Clayton Legacy Band. First up, we heard Horn of Plenty, and that was Sir Humphrey. And many thanks to Alan Shipton for coming in to give us some great stories about the great Buck Clayton. This is Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Kevin Legendre, on FM, online and DAB digital radio. Time now for our new feature, Now is the Time, where we celebrate an unrecognised classic jazz album. Last month we looked at Billy Harper's Black Saint, and this time I'd like to reach back to 1982 and big up Bobby McFerrin's self-titled debut. Yes, I dig. All Feats Can Dance by Bobby McFerrin. He seemed to arrive from nowhere in 1982, and for jazz fans, especially those of us in the UK, he was a breath of fresh air who brought a new level of trickery to the human voice. Bobby McFerrin was part of a rich tradition of singers that included Nat King Cole, Al Jarreau and John Hendricks. But Bobby McFerrin seemed to have something that was utterly distinctive, particularly those rich, deep bass lines that you heard him singing on that last track. Throughout the album, there were moments where he simply uncovered new sounds that went beyond the tried and tested vocabulary of scat singing and vocalese. But another key element of McFerrin's music was humour, as was evidenced on this wonderful piece called Chicken, where he came over like a rooster making whoopee in a farmyard. Yeah. superb improviser, Bobby McFerrin also had a thorough grounding in classical music and is actually the son of two opera singers. Perhaps what he inherited from his parents was an enormous amount of control over his tone and pitch. And although he did a fair amount of soloing on the album, McFerrin really shone when he was using his voice with a kind of fluttering delicacy that you might associate with a mezzo-soprano. Some real magic came when he took his voice down to a near hush to draw intense emotion from Van Morrison's Moondance. He became a gentle breeze, the most quiet of rustles over Victor Feldman's piano, Larry Klein's double bass, and John Guerin's drums.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance, with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance, neath the cover of October sky. The leaves on the trees are falling, to the sound of the breezes that blow. When I'm trying to please you, the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low. And all the night's magic seem to whisper and hush. And all the soft, soft moonlight seem to shine in your blush. Again, I just have one more moon dance with you, my love. Again, I just have one more romance with you, my love. So right, so straight into my arms you will run. And when you come, my heart will be waiting to make sure that you're never alone. Then and then will my dreams come true, dear. Then and then will I make you my own. And every time I touch you, you just tremble inside. And I know how much you want me, that you can't hide.
That was Van Morrison's Moon Dance, performed by Bobby McFerrin on his self-titled and timeless debut album from 1982. On the sleeve notes, the singer himself said that singing was like the thrill of your first hang gliding experience, standing on top of a mountain and getting ready to jump off. Well, the album Bobby McFerrin effectively launched the singer Bobby McFerrin, and almost three decades after its release, that music remains as original and as uplifting as ever. If you have any ideas for our Now's the Time feature, if you feel that there's a lost classic jazz album out there that needs to be championed, then please send a mail to jazzlineup@bbc.co.uk. That's jazzlineup@bbc.co.uk. Well, that's almost it for this week's Jazz Lineup. Next week, there's a preview of this year's Oxford Jazz Festival. And remember, Radio 3 has plenty more jazz with Jez Nelson on Monday nights at 11:15. This week, he has a Guitar Hero special featuring a concert by eight-string virtuoso Charlie Hunter, plus highlights from a reunion of Mahavishnu guitarist John McLaughlin and drummer Billy Cobham, recorded at the Montreux Jazz Festival. We close tonight with a track from the excellent British saxophonist Dennis Baptiste. His new album, Identity by Subtraction, on June Records, finds his quartet in fine form, extending the rich tradition of calypso jazz. Rod Youngs is on drums, Andrew McCormack on piano, Gary Crosby on double bass, and Dennis on tenor and soprano saxophones. This is a great piece called Dance of the Makiritari. Till next time, from me, Kevin Legendre, bye-bye.
You're listening to Through the Night here on BBC Radio 3 with me, Karishma Felfelli. One of the innovations at the 2010 proms were Beethoven nights, concerts of just Beethoven. And the first concert of these from the 2010 season opened with the BBC Symphony Orchestra in the overture from Beethoven's Egmont, based on the Goethe drama about the Flemish aristocrat Egmont, who was beheaded after he defied Philip of Spain. Even though the piece is in the key of F minor and the music itself depicts oppression, Beethoven manages to convey Goethe's intention that despite the subject matter, the impression is one of exhilaration, of facing death with courage and conviction.
Thank you.
The BBC Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Jiří Bělohlávek in Beethoven's Egmont Overture, performed at the first Beethoven Night Prom of 2010. The concert also featured Paul Lewis in his first performance of the Beethoven Piano Concerti cycle. The Concerto No. 1 in C major wasn't the first one Beethoven wrote, but it was the first he allowed to be published, and it looks back to both Mozart and Haydn, but is far more than a youthful homage to both great composers.
Thank you. Thank you.